Marriage is the very foundation of human society. But it was God's idea to begin with. What is God's plan for your marriage? How can you know? What can you do to learn and grow with your spouse to honor God in your marriage? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this deeply personal and critically important topic in his teaching series, God's Plan for Marriage. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart. This is our second installment of my interview with one of the internet's leading atheists. His name is Aaron Ra. On YouTube, he's just wildly popular. We are debating his arguments against creation, against biblical creation, and we're going through topic by topic. So I encourage you, listen to the previous show, and now let's get right to it.
Let me clarify one other thing then on the topic that you're talking about. I've been debating this subject at least as extensively as you have.
Yeah.
And I've come to discover that there are only two types of claims for creationism, and you're welcome to try to test this.
All right.
Those which are both untestable and unsupported, which can neither be indicated, vindicated, verified, or disproved. And the second category for claims which have already been disproved, both scientifically and in a court of law. There is not a third category for claims that are positively indicative of miraculous creation over biological evolution or any other avenue of actual science that are verifiably true.
All right. That's a great assessment. Since you have two categories, those that are untestable and those that have been tested and shown to be false, you're acknowledging that some of the arguments for creation are testable and that they can be tested. And I think that's true of many scientific endeavors. It's commonly said that science cannot lead to absolute truth. You get to that in your fourth video. And the findings of science are always changing. Science cannot tell us anything absolutely. Oh, and this, that science cannot help us with things that are not testable and repeatable or observable. And I disagree with much of that. The whole field of forensic science is such a brilliant field, and the purpose of forensic science is to look at present reality and determine whether or not the present condition was a result of natural causes or intelligent design. I mean, that's the purpose.
When you say intelligent design, you're putting it juxtaposed to natural, meaning something other than natural.
Other than something guided by intelligence, right.
Okay. And we have everything that we know of that's guided by intelligence is natural.
Well, okay.
There's nothing we can show that is guided by a supernatural intelligence.
Well, what word could I use that you'll be okay with to refer to things that were not guided by intelligence? Because I just happen to use the word natural because it's convenient and it's been used billions of times
way. Everything we know that is guided by intelligence is natural.
Well, okay, so I'm asking you, is there a word we can, for example, when a rock falls into a pond and there are ripples, and the particular pattern of the ripples as they go around, lily pads and all, that whole particular pattern isn't guided by intelligence, it's guided by the physical laws. When you look at Mount Rushmore, that, we say, was not brought about by just erosion, but it was designed, there was a designer. So do you have a convenient word I could use for distinguishing between something that was designed and something that was not designed?
No.
Okay, well, if it's okay with you, just for the purpose of discussion, I'll use natural by natural physical laws for things that are not designed, and I'll use design.
But everything that we know of that we can show was designed.
That's okay.
Is natural. What you're arguing for is supernatural.
Aaron Ra, when a human
what
being
I would define as magic.
When a human being designed and then carved Mount Rushmore, that was not magic. It wasn't supernatural.
Right. That was natural.
In our efforts to understand the world around us, there's a central issue about whether things are designed or whether they're not. So should we make up a word right here and now to refer to things that are not designed?
I would say that natural forces also have their own design capabilities.
All right. Well, I'm talking about intentional design that was a result of intellect.
Well,
that's what I'm talking about.
Then we get back to the first foundational falsehood of creationism, which is the assumption that natural processes cannot have been guided by a supernatural entity. And we know that that is a falsehood.
Well, we have your quote here that we'd like to play so the audience could hear it about the first foundational error of creation. But I think it'd be wonderful if we just finish this point, because I didn't get to finish my point.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. We're just talking. But forensic science makes an effort. They look at a scene where there's a dead body, and they attempt to use science to determine whether or not there was an intellect that designed the death of that body, or whether it died from some other natural causes. I think everything I just said is okay.
Yeah, everything that you said would be okay, yes.
All right.
And that doesn't get to... This is a great way to illustrate my contention against the overall point, though, if I may.
Yeah.
When you're talking about the investigation of a murder, let's say that you approach that murder and you have decided in advance that the butler did it. And you have decided what the weapon is, you've decided what the location was, the method of death, everything. And the evidence implies a completely different method of death. But you reject that evidence because you have a predetermined, biased conclusion, an assumed conclusion at the onset, that you will not allow to be questioned.
So you're going to come to a wrong assumption because of your preconceptions. You're going to come to a wrong conclusion, and that's why I enjoy your videos and talking to you. Okay, the same thing is true if you have a presupposition that there was no actor. There was no intelligence, and there was no designed action, but the death came about by natural consequences, not by some third-party intellect. If you have that presupposition, then no matter what the evidence shows, you're going to determine that it was what coroners call natural causes, and you're going to just dismiss out of hand, even though there's overwhelming evidence that there was an intellect and a design that brought about a death in a criminal way. So it cuts both ways.
But it doesn't, because you're assuming, A, that I have a presupposition, which I do not. To say that there is no evident murderer in a given situation is one thing. To refuse to accept that there might have been a murderer for which you have no evidence is the same thing. I do not presuppose that there is no God. All I say is that there evidently is no God. And since there is no evidence of God, then saying that there evidently is no God is a completely accurate statement, requires no presupposition, requires no faith, and it certainly does not prohibit me from accepting the possibility that some magical hand might have been involved.
Okay, I may have misunderstood. I thought you advocated methodological naturalism in science.
Right.
Okay, that means...
And that means that, that all means, of nature...
Could I say
could
what that means
been...
first, Arnra, and then you could clarify?
Okay.
Okay, that means that you reject in principle that the branches of science could be used forensically to determine whether there was an actor and information and purpose and will. You reject that in principle, so that you are like the crime scene investigator who is presupposing that there was no actor. It had to be only by the laws of physics and natural causes, as they say. You are that man who brings your bias to science.
But I'm not bringing a bias. I don't have a presupposition. I don't assume that there can't be an intelligence involved.
I didn't say
that
you did.
Yes, there is. However, if you're investigating a murder, right?
Yeah.
And you want to determine how somebody died. What do you look for? You look for evidence that someone was involved. And how do you determine evidence? Everything that really exists has properties.
Yeah, right.
And every event that occurs has a mechanism. So right. When you have properties and a mechanism that implies that someone else could have done it, there's your evidence. If you don't have a mechanism, you have no evidence. Does that mean that there was no one else involved? No. It only means that what you've got is evidence of these circumstances, and you do not have evidence sufficient to make an assumption that would be baseless, unsupported.
Okay. All right.
My not making an unsupported assumption, you're telling me I'm making a presupposition. That is not correct.
I will clarify. In your heart of hearts, you say that if people want to explore evidence for God, that's fine. You make it clear in your videos. But you insist that the scientific world uses methodological naturalism, that the investigations of science cannot look for an actor or design. You insist on that. And that is your bias.
No. I don't tell you you can't look for an actor
or
design.
You just did.
Matter of fact, I say several times you can. You need a mechanism, and you need some kind of evidence to involve one.
Well, and the same thing is true at a possible crime scene. The actor is a person with a will, and the evidence would be the arrangement of the matter that helps us decide whether it was physical laws and natural consequences or whether there was a direction of intention and will and information. Those are two different things. And so the forensic scientist says, this person could not just have died like this. We have the victim's blood and a fingerprint of the accuser, and we have a bullet in the back of the head and another in the foot and another in the leg. And so this person didn't just die, didn't commit suicide. This was a murder. So this is something that happened in the past, and yet the past is not testable. And
why is the past not testable? You're just giving a demonstration of how the past is testable.
Right.
One of many ways.
Right. Our understanding of the way the past led to the present, that understanding is often testable. That's why I say that science does involve the past, and it does involve things that are not repeatable and not observable. Mm-hmm. Could I go to your second point you made when you said creationism is just a con job that depends on out-of-date and out of context.
I want to clarify. Quotes. You said that science involves things that are not repeatable or observable.
It could, yeah.
And you're talking about bullet wounds. I mean, are you actually saying that these are not repeatable or observable?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying the actual event, the event of the murder.
Which can be reconstructed according to the evidence.
Well, yeah, right. That's my point. Right. That's exactly right. So then you say creationism depends on out of context quotes. And I thought of an example of a quote that I've used on this show that I think when I state it, it comes from Science, the journal Science. And I think that when I say it, you might say I'm taking it out of context. So I'd like to quote this from Ann Gibbons and see if when you say something is out of context, if you really mean that you just disagree with it.
No. I give examples in my video. Where, you know, one of the common quotes, you know, this quote from Darwin, and then I show just the quote that I often hear repeated.
Yeah.
And then you show the rest of the paragraph before and after what he actually said, and you see that it turns the point completely reversed. Another example is Stephen Gould's comment back in the 70s about a dearth of evidence in a particular field of paleontology, whereas since then, we've established thousands of fossil finds, which are in exactly the field that he's talking about.
All right, and
so
I enjoy
still use something from the 70s,
as
if it applies to today, as if we just ignore all those discoveries.
I completely agree to use something where there's modern science that has refuted a previous conclusion. You're exactly right, and that's why we talked about the out-of-date thing, and that almost all creation writing that I've seen in 15 years is filled with the latest scientific references. So we agree with that.
Let's clarify something else then, because this is going to matter.
Yeah.
In these creation writing, I mean, I mentioned the two categories, the things that are not testable and are also unsupported by anything. and those things which have been proven wrong. I said there's no example from the third category. So ignoring for the moment the thousands of creationist arguments which have all been proven wrong a thousand times yet are still being presented on YEC websites around the world, can you show me one verifiably accurate argument, positively indicative of miraculous creation over biological evolution?
Sure.
You can present that.
Yes, right now. The first and second laws of thermodynamics, which teach us, which are the most...
Let me just finish the sentence. A Pratt is a point refuted a thousand times. If you bring up the Pratt, that is not bringing up evidence that is verifiably accurate indicative. Hold on. One moment.
Yeah.
The argument that you're presenting not only has been refuted a thousand times, but is also, even if it were correct, which it's not... is also not positively indicative of miraculous creation or relevant to evolution.
All right. Do you know the name Dan Steyer? He wrote an article in the American Journal of Physics recently titled Evolution and Entropy. I had a debate with a qualified opponent on entropy, and Dan Steyer joined the debate, and it's all on our website at Real Science Friday. You could read the whole thing, see his comments. So I'm not just repeating an argument. In fact, I could explain
Then let me clarify. You brought up the point that I've been asking thousands of people for and nobody could ever present one. How does your... and I got to clarify one other thing, too. The laws of thermodynamics that you're talking about, conceived by Lord Kelvin, who himself did not approve of evolution, yet...
Right, and he was after
argued
Darwin.
That he, and then mentioned also... that he had no argument against evolution, that it was not unscientific. This is the man that conceived both of the laws you're talking about. So he says that his first and second law of thermodynamics has no relevance to evolution at all, and what you were supposed to do was to present something that hasn't been refuted a thousand times. We'll get into how it's been refuted a thousand times, but you're also supposed to bring something that was in that argument positively indicative of a miraculous creation, and you have not done that.
Well, that's because I only got six words out, and you stopped me. But we're having a nice conversation, so yeah, let me explain what we have learned from the most well-tested of all the laws of science, in that matter can convert into energy, energy can convert into matter, but neither matter nor energy comes into existence from nothing. And energy is expended such that the available usable energy eventually is depleted. So from those two fundamental laws of science, we know this, that a rock cannot make itself from nothing and a fire cannot burn forever. This is why Stephen Hawking and Hubble and everybody and Einstein said the universe has not been eternal, because we would have come to an equilibrium in the temperature of the universe, it would all be dead cold, and there are very hot spots called suns that are scattered throughout and galaxies. So a rock cannot make itself from nothing, and a fire, including the galaxies, cannot burn forever. Therefore, the physical universe could not have made itself from nothing, and it could not have always been here. Therefore, it needs a supernatural origin.
Wrong.
Okay, that's your assertion. I just
made an argument. Here's one of many options.
Yeah.
If you remember back to the old Pong game, you remember the Atari Pong?
I played it. It was not Atari. Atari turned it down, if I recall. Did they?
Oh, okay.
Was it Atari? No, it was Atari.
It was Atari.
You're right.
It was obviously a long time ago.
It was Milton Bradley turned it down, and it started Atari. You're right.
Okay. Well, anyway, here you have a game board, you know, the pieces moving around, but they're not... they don't have any height at all. So we're talking about purely two-dimensional. Now, when you bring in the volume of depth, where does that depth come from? You can't say that it came from nothing, although it can't exist in the boundaries that they have. So it doesn't come necessarily from nothing. Likewise, if you have if gravity is a bend in space-time and a black hole is considered to be a hole in space-time, how can you have a hole in space-time? So when something goes into that hole, what happens to it? So if you have an eruption of a singularity, what could be the catalyst of it? Is it a Bronze Age genie, which is what the creationists basically propose using magic words, or is it something infinitely more complex than that.
Or was there not an eruption of everything from nothing? So that's another alternative.
I've had the pleasure of arguing with Lawrence Krauss on that point. I mentioned that evolutionists, if you have to use that word, which I hate because it's such a stupid word, but you know, people who accept science, including and specifically evolution, do not argue as evolutionary scientists that anything came from nothing. Now, physicists like Lawrence Krauss will come in and mech everything up by defining what nothing meant.
Did you just say that physicists, cosmologists do not assert that everything came from nothing?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I said physicists will come in and muck everything up because they're doing a different field of science. So they redefine what nothing is. And it goes back to that two-dimensional Atari screen where you are going to turn all of that at right angle and pull a third dimension out of that. Now, from the perspective of a two-dimensional entity, that would appear to be from nothing. But as Lawrence Krauss defines it, that's nothing from your perspective, but not nothing in reality. And so if you have a flood and an inflation of the universe from what would essentially, from our perspective, be nothing, an infinitesimal point of whatever, that would be nothing only from our perspective as we are part of that infinitesimal point. But none of that is related to evolution either. It has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I imagine evolution starts billions of years later. By the way, Krauss from ASU, right? I went to ASU. I studied computer science there. Studied artificial intelligence, which was so very interesting and so relevant to so much of my career since then. But
I have another question for you. Since you brought up, and remember, I'm asking for people for evidence that's positively indicative of a miraculous creation. And maybe I need to clarify why, okay? I talk about all these people with their religious beliefs, and you can't express anything that you believe on faith as though it's something you actually know. There's nothing you can demonstrate. There's not something that a Hindu and a Jew can argue about which one actually knows what they believe if it's particular to their religious beliefs. Nobody can show anything they actually know. Even within the Christian community, you have people that are, you know, in different denominations who believe, you know, all kinds of different things about even the existence and the identity of God. You've got binitarians, Trinitarians, Unitarians.
Yeah.
You can't get people to agree on practically anything. And it is just like I said, when you just throw a dart at the dartboard and say, okay, that's what I'm going to believe, and I'm not going to change my mind no matter what the evidence implies. Now, when I'm asking for a fact, evidence that actually positively implies a miraculous creation, you then say that matter cannot create, or a rock cannot create itself, which, of course, you understand. I do not believe that a rock created itself, and I do not believe that fires burn forever.
Right.
But neither do I believe that anything comes from nothing, and you do.
Well, the entire universe, it is asserted, it used to be that it came from a spot that was smaller than the period at the end of the sentence. I mean, we've all read that countless times. Now it's asserted that it came from nothing. And the pinnacle of this is Stephen Hawking, who asserts that for the origin of the universe, that the Big Bang borrowed the gravitational energy of the universe to produce the matter of the universe. But that's cheating, because all we have to ask is, what universe? When you're trying to describe the origin of the universe, you cannot appeal to the universe to explain how it got here.
Right. Right. And again,
and he does
we're also talking about evolution. And remember, your evidence was to imply over evolution, right? And I ask you for a fact positively indicative of miraculous creation.
Well, I'll add
over
to,
biological evolution. So when you argue parodies that you know I don't believe, which means that it is a straw man, I don't believe a rock created itself, for example.
Well, you think the universe created itself from what? Do you disagree with Stephen Hawking?
It's completely irrelevant to what I my perspective. Well, I study evolution.
Do you assert that the universe came into existence naturally? Do you assert that?
I don't assert anything.
You don't?
No.
Why did you make a video?
Okay. Because I don't assert anything. That's why I made a video.
I made a video explaining
how I don't assert anything.
Hey, could we get back to, you said that we take quotes out of context. And
well,
you,
hold on. Go ahead.
You were about to describe Darwin saying that the complexity of the eye makes it seem like it's absurd in the highest degree to think that it could have evolved. I think that's one of your examples.
Right.
And so
out of context.
All right. And I think thou protesteth too much because of this. There's not one person in your audience or my audience or that you could name in the entire world who knows about Darwin, who doesn't think that Darwin believed in evolution. Everyone knows that Darwin believed that we evolved. Everyone knows that. Nobody
right.
doesn't know it. So when we quote that,
wait.
It's not to imply.
I know people who think that Darwin, who have argued with me online that Darwin didn't believe his own theory. That's
no.
one of the common misquotes.
No, you mean that he repented on his deathbed, and that's not true.
No.
That's not what I'm talking about. Yeah,
that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people down in South Texas teaching in their church that even Darwin didn't believe his own theory.
Well, if you could,
it's a common argument.
You're a great researcher. If you give me a quote, a person, a date, and a link, I'll put it on a show.
If you'd like, I can forward you the messages.
Well, just one.
I've gotten my inbox from 2-3 years ago.
Well, something published. Anything on the internet's big because I've never met one person.
That's not a problem because. You can find that one on, I'm sure you can find that one on the
well, I've never met anyone.
Quote.
I've never met anyone who didn't think that Darwin believed that we evolved. So the reason I say thou protesteth too much is because the reason we use that quote is to say that we think Darwin was right, that it is absurd, and we reject his teaching of evolution. That's
why
we use the quote.
You're rejecting the rest of the quote wherein he explains how it is.
No, we're not rejecting that. We know that he thinks by tiny, tiny changes, the eye came into existence. We gave to P.Z. Myers a Trockley a challenge that he posted. I know that you know P.Z., I believe you
do.
He posted our P.Z. Myers Trockley a challenge on his blog just about 3-4 weeks ago. And he said, you know what? I don't have an answer for you. We asked, how could the trochlea, how could that system have come about by evolutionary mechanisms? And we just asked a few questions just for a broad answer. And he said, I don't know, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it happened some way, but I don't know. So at least he was being honest. Stop the tape. Hey, this is Bob Enyart. That was our second installment of my interview with Aaron Ra, the wildly popular internet atheist with his own YouTube channel. We will continue this on our next program. You can listen to all three segments online at realsciencefriday.com. Also, so many other fun debates, interviews with scientists, evolutionists, creationists, atheists. It's just a lot of fun online. And we have a great science department. If you click on our store and click on the science department, you will see debates with atheists, with physicists on the age of the earth, on atheism, on Darwinism, really neat things, and also great DVDs and beautiful books on science and creation and evolution. So check that out at realsciencefriday.com or call us. So our number is 1-800-836-9278. May God bless you.
Children are a blessing from God. But when parents reject and ignore his wisdom and teaching about parenting, children can grow up to be a curse to their parents and to the world around them. What does the Bible say about parents and children, education, and child discipline? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this powerful and critical topic in his teaching series, Raising Godly Children. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.